You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
Here's that sound. It's the sound of the start of another edition of the Roto Experts in the Morning right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. It's the Sunday edition. It's myself and George Kurtz bringing it to you for the next 2 hours before Fantasy Bagels and Baseball with Tony and Cha-Cha. As we head through your Sunday, hopefully you're having a good morning. Hopefully you're having a good weekend. Yesterday was kind of an old school sports day, George, in that we had tons of baseball. But we had the Kentucky Derby on. There was a big boxing match last night, which ended up being a very lopsided affair. But I can't say that I'm an expert on either horse racing or boxing. But I caught the horse race yesterday. I've always been enamored with horse racing. I've always been a fan of it. I can't call myself an expert, but as a fan, I do like to watch it. I used to watch it more. I used to follow it a little bit more, but I caught a couple of minutes of that. And I would say that, honestly, on my sports bucket list, Derby is probably number one. I don't know what your thoughts are about that.
Well, I grew up in Elmont, so that's where the Belmont Park is and the Belmont Stakes. That's right. So you want to know how much I know about horse racing?
Quite a bit.
Zero. Okay, I don't know who won yesterday. I mean, I'm sure I saw the highlights somewhere. I know it was a muddy track or something like that, but I couldn't even begin to tell you who won it. No, horse racing has never been my thing.
It was Always Dreaming, who is one of the co-favorites. I think I heard something about that being the fourth or fifth year in a row that a favorite has won, which is the longest stretch in the history, 143-year history of the Derby. But would you have interest in going to attend it? The Derby as a spectacle, as a sports fan,
it would be wasted on me.
Yeah,
it's like somebody going to the Super Bowl doesn't care about football whatsoever.
Yeah,
you know, it really be wasted on me. Would I go? Sure, because it is the Kentucky Derby. I get it. You know, it's not like I go to the NBA Finals if somebody wants me to go with them. But that being said, it would truly be wasted on me because to me, it's just, you know, horses running around in an oval track.
Yeah, I get it. For some reason, I actually used to go to Belmont. I grew up not too far from where George grew up, and I used to go to Belmont, not on a regular basis, but I would go occasionally. So always kind of fun for me as a kid to go and see the horses. You know, it either catches your fancy or it doesn't, but I sort of get the monotony. It's similar to those people that aren't into auto racing. Like, I get it, you know. It doesn't catch my fancy, but Scott and Engel and his son are way into it. So in that sense, different strokes for different folks. But turning over to the MLB side of things, I got to give Tony Cicada props yesterday. He nailed it on his DFS calls yesterday. Went with Dylan Bundy, who didn't have a great outing, but he gets the win, so that helps you for DFS purposes. And he went against Dylan Covey, who Tony said yesterday might be the worst starting pitcher in baseball, I think. And he goes four innings, gives up 10 hits and 6 runs. Ended up being a close game because the White Sox put up a couple of runs late. But Tony was all over that. Have to give him credit where credit is due.
Yeah, well, Bundy, only part of Bundy, he didn't strike out a lot of batters. Unfortunately, did I go with Bundy yesterday? No, I went with, I actually paid the money for Kershaw, and I went Garrett Cole. So Kershaw paid off. Cole pitched great. Didn't get the W there as the Pittsburgh just didn't score any runs.
Yeah. So we'll obviously take you all the way around MLB today. We're going to look, I'm not going to try and depress everybody with the injuries. We do have to touch on a couple of big pieces of news, but I want to transition it into some waiver wire articles that were written this week by Tim McCullough and by some other people on rotoexperts.com in order to try to help you. Instead of complaining about it and being malcontents about it, as I was yesterday, we're going to try and find some solutions and some guys out there. We'll get into George's who's hot, who's not. That's always a fun exercise. We'll see if he positively jinxed anybody on the who's not list. So we'll tease that. We'll do that a little bit later this hour. Talk a little bit about NFL, some contract stuff coming up. Blake Bortles in the news about his fifth year option getting picked up. We'll find out whether that was good move, bad move, and a lot of other things on the slate. It was a full slate yesterday. George, hockey, basketball, I just mentioned horse racing and boxing, and obviously a full slate of MLB games. We are in the prime area of prime time of the season regarding anybody, any sports fan being able to watch as much content as possible.
Absolutely. Yesterday was a fun sports day. Pretty much watched baseball and hockey all day long. And today we got somewhat similar, just no derby.
Correct. But I have to quarrel with you on the Rangers call. You said that the Rangers are outclassing Ottawa, and here they are. They're on the precipice of being eliminated.
You just made Pete Considori so unhappy. The Rangers are the better team. They're finding ways to lose. The Rangers are like searching for a way to either make the seven games or just to lose it outright.
Hear you. So we'll be back in a couple of minutes, folks. Mike and George on the Roto Experts in the Morning for the next 2 hours. Listen in. Welcome back. We got pep in our step this morning. Like it, Pete Considori. I don't know what that was, but we got. George, we're off to a flying start. It's nice, energetic music. Something that I like hearing for once instead of that weird Saturday Night Fever stuff that he usually plays, but we're off to a good start.
I think I prefer Saturday Night Fever. I don't know what that was that was just going on.
Good stuff. So, well, I'll give you another minute on hockey since you teased it going out of the break. The Rangers, obviously, that wasn't a goal, right? There's no quarrel with that. The call, the high stick goal that got waved off in overtime.
No, it was no goal. And listen, the Rangers are the better team. I can't say this enough. The Rangers are the better team here. They probably should have won every game in this series. It, to be down 3-2 is just listen, as a non Pete Considori, Matt Modica, two big Rangers, they gotta be ripping their hair out. I mean, if I'm a Ranger fan right now watching these games, I'm probably screaming and yelling at the TV. I might not have a TV anymore. I might have put something through it. I mean, the Rangers are playing a frustrating brand of hockey.
Yeah. We'll give Pete a chance to talk about it a little bit later. I want to get to some of the MLB news. So some injury updates before we get – we're going to do that right into the waiver wire. But Cole Hamels thing we actually didn't talk about yesterday. He's not expected back into the rotation until after the All-Star break. He rejoined the Rangers on Friday night, just 2 days after being hit with the news that he's going to miss at least 8 weeks. So there's a bunch of implications here because it can impact his status long term with the Rangers. He signed through 2018 with a club option for $20 million for 2019 with a $6 million buyout. There's a bunch of innings milestones that he has to hit. If he's not on the table list with a shoulder or elbow injury, there's all kinds of stuff here that are contract noteworthy. But the bottom line is Hamels is going to be out for a really long time still.
Yeah, he wasn't pitching all that great anyway. Not that really, that's just sugarcoating things. You had him, you lost him. You're not certainly not happy about it. It's been a strange season. I mean, no Hamels, no Syndergaard. We're seeing a lot of pitches. Bumgarner decides to go ass overhead on a bike. So we're seeing a lot of injuries. And so a lot of top pitching injuries. I mean, with Hamels, you're talking about, you're SP2, Bumgarner's SP1, Syndergaard's an SP1. Tough to survive that, especially if you haven't had both on your team. But Hamels isn't as big as a loss as the other two. The other two are aces. You know, we know they're going to pitch well. Hamels pitching in Texas, it could be a little dicey at times. I'm not saying it's addition by subtraction, but I don't think you'll miss Hamels all that much. His strikeout per innings has gone way down.
Yeah, so just keep that in mind. He's going to be out for another couple of months. You've obviously probably already addressed that in some way, but keep in mind that you're going to have somebody in there long term. Yoenis Cespedes will undergo a series of comprehensive tests Monday, the day he's eligible to return from the DL, in an attempt to learn why he continues to suffer from hamstring injuries that land him there. So Sandy Alderson said the slugger is, quote, doing better from the hamstring pull that sent him to the DL on April 28th. So they have all these evaluations coming up. He indicated also that Seth Lugo or Steven Matz could return by the end of the month, though no specific timetable. Lucas Duda is scheduled to take 10 at-bats in a simulated game yesterday. He was supposed to do that. So that's just a portion of the Mets' injuries, but the bottom line is Cespedes is scheduled to come off the DL on Monday, and it looks like they're not ready to have him come back yet.
No, listen, we don't know the Mets screwed that situation up, but they should have put him on the DL automatically. Cespedes has had these injuries in the past. He's very bulky. He's very muscly, so it's not surprised that he injured this. Mets should have, like I said, they should have handled most of their injuries differently. I think we all know that with the Mets. So Even if they say he's going to come back in the middle of next week, I am not going to have him in any of my lineups here. We don't know when he's going to come back. That's the bottom line is. With that, with this injury, I have to think of play it much more cautious this time. But like I said, either way, you're out with another week. The Mets are still hitting. I mean, which is really kind of surprising because the Mets have been hitting fine over the past week ever since they ended that Washington series. The bats have come alive even without Cespedes. Like I said, bottom line is you're not starting him this week.
All right. What's amazing about this, so this next name, Josh Donaldson, continues to progress in his rehabilitation from a lingering right calf injury, and official return date remains up in the air. So the amazing thing, George, is normally in a given season, we're going to go through a bunch of injury issues. It's never as many high-profile players as we're doing right now. We just talked about Cole Hamels. As you said, he's not the ace that he once was, but Cespedes, and now Josh Donaldson. The quote here, everything is coming along pretty well. Slowly, the three-time All-Star said after a 6-1 loss to the Rays. I was able to get on the treadmill today and do some light running and a little bit more aggressive agility stuff. Bottom line, he says, well, hopefully we continue progressing in the right direction. So no timetable. If you drafted Josh Donaldson, you're just shoulder shrugging, right? You've already had to address it, but you have no idea when he's coming back.
Well, we do have an idea. They're hoping he can come back on the homestand, which is, starts on Monday. Maybe he can, maybe he can't. It's a 9-game homestand, so keep that in mind as well. That means he could still be another 10 days away for all we know. But I hope that's when he can return there. This is a tricky injury, Mike. This is not an injury he suffered this year. He suffered this injury last season. Right. Let's let you know, it didn't go away during the entire offseason. You know, that's November, December, January. That's 4 months, and he still couldn't get rid of it. You know, so tricky here, and he's probably been, it's probably led to other injuries. He's probably been trying to, take care of it and not maybe lean on that calf as much, so I can see that causing groin problems, causing hamstring problems. Could easily see that causing other problems here. I think bottom line is this. If I own Donaldson, I forget which play we said this about yesterday, but he comes back, pitches, hits well. I think I'd want to move him because I don't think this is the last we're going to hear this year of this calf injury. I don't think if it didn't go away in 4 months, I can't see it going away in 3 weeks.
I completely agree. I don't see why this stint on the DL would solve the problem that didn't go away after months. So even if he gets out there, guts it out, he's probably favoring it. It could come up again. I think you're right. I just don't know what you can get for him, how many cents on the dollar you're going to get for him. But at the same time, maybe it gets a problematic player off your roster for the rest of the year, even though he's very talented. How can you possibly count on that guy when you're trying to win? You'd almost rather have somebody more stable that you can count on for the lineup, to put in the lineup each and every day. So Mike Trout scratched late from the Angels lineup last night. He was scheduled to play center field and bat third. He was scratched right before the first pitch. He also sat out Thursday's game against the Mariners with hamstring tightness. Cameron Maybin played in his place. He was the American League Player of the Month for April. 355, 8 homers, 21 RBIs, and 5 stolen bases in 30 games this season, George. So thoughts here? You think it's just an extra day off, or you're getting concerned?
No, they said he aggravated it during warmups, so that's not good. That's a problem there. I mean, I don't think they're going to put him on a 10-day deal. I think he's the kind of player they would wait for if he needs to miss 3 or 4 days. Not that I know any of this. For all I know, he'll be in the lineup today. We don't know. But I don't think he's going to go on a deal unless the injury is more severe than they're letting on here. So obviously he was examined by doctors at the last night's game or during the game, so they'll have a better idea today. I think DFS-wise, I can't put Trout in my lineup anymore because that's a late game. You may not find out again until 3 p.m. Eastern or whatever, right before, after the lineup's locked. So DFS-wise, I can't start him now until I'm sure he's going to get back in the lineup.
Yeah, he ironically becomes a little bit of a contrarian play for somebody taking a shot on there being a lower percentage on Trout. But again, it's very risky in that regard. So Eztrubel Cabrera left the Marlins game yesterday in the third inning with a left thumb injury. X-rays were negative, so he stayed down for about a minute, got back to his feet. Ultimately, it looks like he could be okay, but you're going to obviously want to keep an eye on it. Just another Met that goes down that had to come out in the middle of a game.
Yeah, dove for a ball in the hole, and it's hard to explain. When you die, sometimes the glove folds under you, and you fold your wrist over, and usually it's your wrist that gets injured. For him, it was the thumb. Obviously, it's at least sprained. Yeah, but he didn't tear anything big. I don't see him playing for a couple of days. There's been news that, Reyes is going to move to shortstop. There's also been news that maybe they call up the Uber prospect, Ahmed Rosario, eventually to give them some life there. I think they'll go Reyes first to see if that wakes him. Although Reyes has been a nightmare in the field so far this season. Not very good. Not that Cabrera was that good either. Cabrera was really a Derek Jeter type. Any ball he got to, yeah, he caught, was an automatic out, but he has, you know, about as much range as a Daisy air rifle, so that's a problem there. But that's with the noise from the Mets here, that Reyes could move over, and eventually, I would think after the Super 2 passes, maybe somewhere in June, July, after the All-Star break, we'll see Rosario.
Cardinals trying to compete with the Mets for the most injured players. Jose Martinez grabbed his leg yesterday as he hobbled, stumbled coming out of the box. He'll be out, it looks like, for some time. He was replaced by Matt Adams. Jameson Taillon of the Pirates is the big news. He's placed on the 10-day disabled list. It's retroactive to Thursday, so he's eligible to return May 14th. It's not related to his hernia surgery from a couple of years ago, but ultimately, Jameson Taillon, a guy that you're going to miss a couple of starts with.
This is really a joke when you think of it. This season is all about injuries. I mean, this is going to be sort of almost what a fantasy football season can sometimes be. Whichever team stays healthiest wins. I mean, I'm looking at my leagues I'm in last night. I'm averaging 60 DL players a team.
It's crazy. I mean, I got two closers on the DL right now. I had to place somebody else on the DL yesterday. It's brutal. We're going to come back with waiver wires to try and get some of these guys replaced. Mike and George on the Roto Experts in the Morning, back after this. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, Mike and George. Going to go to the Roto, rotoexperts.com right now. By the way, hit us up on Twitter at Fantasy Sports Radio. That's at FNTSY Radio. I'm at Mike Blewett. George is at George Kurtz. We're going to go to Roto Experts right now, get you some inside information, some specials, a special article written by InsideInjuries.com, as well as another article by Tim McCullough, kind of digging into waiver wire pickups in conjunction with all these injuries. Obviously, you're going to need some help. You know, Jacoby Ellsbury hasn't started in a few days. Thank God for Aaron Hicks, by the way, George, a couple homers yesterday. The RotoExperts.com exclusive Edge in-season fantasy baseball package is your ultimate bench coach for the 2017 season. Stay ahead of the pack with our in-depth statistical breakdowns, trend analysis, and player insights, including what we're about to talk about in terms of waiver wire. Become a waiver wizard and learn how to scan the numbers like a roto scientist. We'll help you set the ideal lineups every week, and this season you get a built-in fantasy training staff with our new injury advisor powered by InsideInjuries.com. Get the RotoExperts.com exclusive Edge in-season fantasy baseball package now and start soaring to the top of the standings. Enter promo code free radio at checkout for a special discount. Sounds like my throat is injured, George. Jeez, voice cracking.
10-day disaster. DL.
Yep, you're going to DL me. So I'll dive into Tim McCullough's article first, where he said the injuries are really piling up. He says he feels like he says this every year, but could you take a wild guess as to how many players are currently on the DL?
Currently on the deal, let's see, 30 Major League Baseball teams. I'll say they're averaging three apiece. I'll say 90.
It's 161 players currently on
That's
the DL.
That's psychotic. That's five a team.
It's exactly right. It's 20%, right? It's 20% of the league.
They're massaging it. I mean, some of these are not real true DLs. These are guys who will be probably healthy in 5 to 6 days, but they're taking advantage of the losing them for an extra 5 days, play it more cautious. And when I say taking advantage of it, this doesn't bother me. Yeah, I think you want to be cautious. How many times do we get frustrated? A guy comes back too early, then he's out a month rather than the 15 days, 10 days. So I don't mind it at all. So I'm not complaining about it. But teams are taking advantage of it. I don't think there's any doubt about that. 161, that's an incredible number.
It's over 20.
That's an incredible number.
It's over 20%. You can imagine. So we're how many games have we played? About 30? A little less than 30? So we're not even 20% of the way through the season. Is that right? Yeah, 162 games. Yeah, you're looking. Yeah, we're just under 20%. Yeah. So I'm just trying to compare it to football. Like, imagine what's the number I'm looking for? Like, three games into the year in football.
Well, you can never compare it to football because once you put someone on IR, they can't come back. So
I agree, but imagine if you didn't. I agree with that, but imagine if you didn't have 10 players available three games into the year. You'd be like, this season's over already. But luckily, in MLB, it seems like there's plenty of teams that are running into this problem. So at least it's spread out somewhat. Granted, there's some clusters in New York and St. Louis, but ultimately, 161 players on the DL right now. We'll see what we can mine up. So Tim sets it up. He says players listed below are available in at least 50% of leagues on CBS. It's been our experience. Ownership numbers on the other major sites like ESPN and Yahoo tend to be lower. So he uses the CBS numbers, thinking that if the players are available there, they're almost certain to be available elsewhere. Anyway, Manny Pena, catcher for the Brewers. He's splitting time behind the dish with Jet Bandy. They're both swinging a hot bat. It's been an almost 50-50 split. He's slashing .385, .429, .558. That's the best he's ever produced. So he's playing way over his head, but previously thought to be a quadruple A player. Maybe Manny Pena is somebody you can get in there in the catching spot, George.
Once again, depending on how, if you're playing in a two-catcher league, you're desperate for any catcher. You know, at the very least, he's a ride the hot guy, so yeah, you take advantage of it. We saw Wellington Castillo go on the DL this week. He may have lost a catcher late. Catchers, in my mind, get hurt more than any other position. We've seen Buster Posey get hurt this year, Gary Sanchez. I'm on board with Pena, but I don't think he'll keep it up all season long.
Yeah, Alex Avila is another catcher he's got in there who's he's solid if you're in an OBP league, especially with a career .349 OBP.
I just claimed him in a league where I had the aforementioned Castillo. I think that claim goes through this morning, or at least I hope it goes through, because if not, I'll have pretty much Mike Blewett a catcher.
Yeah, well, two catchers on my squad are Lucroy and Molina, and I can't say that I've been too thrilled with that. Lucroy's been a mess. So in any event, moving on to another position, Justin Bauer, first baseman for the Marlins. Rap on him is he can't hit left-handed pitching. It's always been the case, and it continues to this day. All 44 of his career homers have come against right-handed pitching. But it makes him a useful player in leagues with daily moves. He hits the ball pretty hard, but too many on the ground. So thoughts on Justin Bauer?
Yeah, I mean, that covers it. He is what he is. He'll provide you some power. Average going to take a hit, can't hit lefties. It's why we heard that Realmuto might play some first base, just to make sure his bat stays in the lineup on days that he needs a day off the Sunday or a Saturday. So I think you might see that on a Sunday or a Saturday where a lefty's going up against the mound. You get Realmuto out behind the plate, put him at first base, makes the lineup a little deeper.
Next guy is somebody that you can really utilize because of the multiple position eligibility they has. As Tim calls him, marvelous Marwin Gonzalez has found a way to make himself useful. So he's got multiple position eligibility. On top of that, he's got 9 homers, 21 RBIs, 11 runs, 2 stolen bases, and just 78 plate appearances, George.
Yeah, probably the hot guy, though, this week that everybody wants to go out and grab. We've been hearing his name now for at least a week, if not 10 days. You mentioned the 9 home runs. He's an absolute grab. Another player, once again, most of these guys, any guy you grab right about now, probably 95% of these guys, you're going to ride them now. As soon as they slow down, as soon as pitchers figure them out again and they go back to what they always do, you'll want to move on from. But that's fine. You know, that's what we expect. But you want to take these guys while they're hot and play them.
Yeah, he's only got a 190 BABIP right now, which is more than 100 points below his career mark. So he's doing all his production with a particularly low BABIP in any event. Joe Panik, second baseman for the Giants. His BABIP tanked to just .245 last season, which caused fantasy owners to, wait for it, panic and stay away in droves at this year's draft. God. It's Tim's joke, not mine. Just doing the reporting. He's gone out this year. He's hitting .307. 370, 411. He's triple slashing that with a healthy .337 BABIP thus far. So considering for the leadoff spot in some instances is Bruce Bochy. So thoughts on Joe Panik?
I don't know if we should yell at Tim for using that joke or you for repeating it or both of you.
We'll take a little bit of flack for that. I think both of us.
And the scary part is I actually laughed. And I knew it was coming. That's what's really scary. Not because I read the article. It's because I got it when you were saying it. I'm like, oh, he's going to go that. He's going to go there, isn't he? Yeah. Some people thought that Panik would have a bigger season coming out of the gate, that he could be a sleeper in late in drafts. I think the problem is second base is pretty deep. I mean, it really is. It's a nice deep position. But, hey, maybe you lost Kinsler. You know, I doubt Kinsler plays today since they're off tomorrow, so they'll give him an extra day's rest. And maybe you don't want to take the chance that he's going to be available on Tuesday. You think it's going to linger, or you might go on with DL here. Panik would be a nice pickup.
Yeah, I got so much depth at second base. It's the one position I really won't need. I have Cano and Peraza and Baez, so I'm all stacked up. Not saying everybody's playing great, but I'm not going to pick up a second baseman is what I mean. Jed Lowry, another second baseman. Very good hitter. Can't stay healthy. He's hitting again well 1 month in and playing just about every day. So Tim says really makes him worth owning in AL-only leagues and maybe deeper mixed league play. But it's going to be a lot of run-scoring opportunities because he hits at the top of the lineup. So what do you think of Jed Lowry?
I'm not as thrilled about Lowry because what does he really offer you? Yes, he can average somewhat. You know, sometimes he has positional eligibility all over the place, which can help your fantasy team. But other than that, you know, where's the sizzle here? He's a placeholder for me, pure placeholder. Now, if you're in an AL-only league or a deep league, 16, 18 teams, of course, that's completely different. You know, for our analysis, generally, we're talking about 12-team mixed leagues. And I just don't see it with Lowry, not unless you're desperate.
100% agree. I was going to use the phrase, and you took the words right out of my mouth. He's the ultimate placeholder. If you got really bashed with injuries and you need to piece it together for a few weeks, fine, but don't expect much out of him other than some decent batting average and a few runs scored. So Zach Cozart, we're moving over to shortstop. Zach Cozart, lots of you are going to look at, because this is according to Tim, lots of you are going to look at Cozart's 329, 423, 549 line and go running to the waiver wire. Just point out that's not always going to be the case with Cozart. There's the obvious 419 BABIP, which blows away his career 279 mark. So you just have to know that that's not sustainable. His career hard hit percentage is just 25%, and his single season best was last year's 31%. You could say he's trending upwards slightly, but yeah, he hit a career high 16 homers last year. Maybe that continues. So what are your thoughts on Zach Cozart at short?
This entire team is hitting above their heads in Cincinnati. And they have destroyed San Francisco pitching over the weekend here. Cozart, you know, sooner or later, I think he's going to get moved because Dilson Herrera is also on the wings there, and they want to really bring up this youth movement here. So I think he'll get traded as soon as the team suffers an injury at shortstop and needs something there, and they'll give Cincinnati what they want for him. That'll hurt his value. That being said, that could be 2 months down the line. Listen, he's playing in the Great American Small Park. I mentioned that lineup is hitting a ton. There's a lot of Reggie Grunt to be thinking about grabbing here. Hell, Hamilton almost had a cycle in the second inning last night.
I wanted to talk about Billy Hamilton. We'll get to him in a bit.
Yeah, so you're going to get what you want with Cozart. He's a middle infielder, and I think he's a middle infielder that is for a 12-team league. I wouldn't mind owning him.
Moving over to some utility guys. Yulesky Gurriel is a guy we talked about before the season, George. We really don't have much to judge him on, right? It's a lot of statistics from Cuba, and we just have 230-odd plate appearances in the majors. But he started poorly this year, but he's going to point out, here's what Tim says, his first 12 of the games of the season, he produced a 2268 average with one homer, two RBIs, and three runs. But his last 13 games, he's got a 347 batting average with one homer, six RBIs, and eight runs scored. So thoughts on Gurriel?
Once again, what is he providing a fantasy team? It looks like he's going to give you some average here, right? That's valuable, but that's it. He doesn't steal bases. He's not hitting for any power. I understand the small sample size. You said it's a 230 at-bats, 228, I believe. So I get it. But if he doesn't add you anything else, what are you hoping for here from a first baseman, a corner infielder? We generally need more than that. He looks like Joe Mauer light right now.
Yeah, agreed. I just don't know exactly what you can get out of him. I mean, we already talked about Marwin Gonzalez. We're talking about Gurriel now. I just don't know exactly what you're going to get out of Gurriel that you wouldn't get out of picking up somebody like his teammate Gonzalez. So a bunch more guys to go through here. We'll continue to do it after the break, but I'll sneak in one more before the break. Michael Taylor from the Nationals after Eaton's injury, Michael Taylor slots in. So your thoughts here about him as a pickup?
I think Washington will eventually go out and get a center fielder. You know, I think that he could be a part of that. Whoever they decide to get it closer, maybe they make a multi-deal there and get a center fielder as well. I think the Nationals know they may be the best team in the National League right now up there with the Cubs who aren't playing that well. I think they're going to replace Taylor. I don't think his future will be the entire season. He's tried and failed before. I don't see why that's going to change this season. Just because he played a little bit more in the minors. So if you're going to ride him now. But he's not doing anything for your team. He's not hitting for average power. He will steal a few bases.
Yeah, that's about all you're going to get, some runs. I'm with you. I think they go out and get somebody else. So it's a very short-term piecing together. Mike and George on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network will continue to try to fix your broken teams after this. Softer side of the Roto Experts in the Morning.
If I needed a nap.
Taking you through it, just trying to get everybody to relax, George, as they get fired up with all the injuries that we're talking about.
Sunday morning.
Yeah, it's a Sunday morning. There's a lot of injuries out there. This is your spa moment. Just try and meditate and just pick up some of these guys off the waiver wire. You're as frustrated as I am. As George said, he's averaging like six guys per team. I'm getting crushed as well. It's crazy, George, because I can't even get to all the injuries. I'm going to recap a few now just to blow through them before we get back to the waiver wire. Before that, I just want to let everybody know you can take the world's premier 24/7 fantasy sports radio network with you wherever you go. Download the FNTSY Sports Radio app in the iTunes Store on Google Play and listen for free anytime, anywhere. You can hear Tony Cincotta on the treadmill, Benny Riccardi in the car, or Greg Sussman on the subway. Listen to us on Saturday and Sunday mornings when you're making your breakfast from 8 to 10. Or just relax with the king on the couch or Jake Seeley when you're jogging. We keep you updated and informed wherever you go. Get the FNTSY Sports Radio app for free right now in the iTunes Store on Google Play and take the experts with you, the Fantasy Sports Radio app. So thanks for joining us today. Just a couple of other recaps. Christian Yelich was out of the starting lineup due to a tight hamstring last night. He's hoping that he can play today. Don Mattingly is hoping that Yelich can play today. Bryce Harper was out of the lineup for a second consecutive day with a tight hamstring. Dusty Baker was asked, when they tell me they're better, I like to hold them out at least another day. We'll see. So that's what Dusty was saying about Bryce Harper. With co-closers Sean Kelly and Kota Glover both on the DL, who will pitch ninth inning? Dusty Baker says same thing as yesterday. I don't know. So you got that. Noah Syndergaard out for at least 6 weeks from a lat tear he described as very specific. So that's just, I mean, look, we could do a whole show on Noah and the Mets, George, but I'm not going to do it. Zach Britton, we know, is on the DL. David Price, he threw 50 pitches in a three-inning simulated game a couple of days ago. We'll continue to monitor that, but there's still no time frame there. Brian Dozier and Byron Buxton, were both held out of the Twins lineup yesterday as Dozier suffered a mild left ankle sprain on Friday, and Buxton is still feeling the effects of running to the wall twice on Thursday. I think Kiermaier played yesterday, so that might not be, I could be wrong about that. In any event, George, it's really crazy. Yeah, so in any event, those are not throwaway names that I just went through.
No, it's been a painful opening month of the season, opening month plus. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And right now, it's survival of the fittest. You know, I say it all the time, Mike, when it comes to and fantasy football, fantasy baseball, hockey, whatever it is you want to play. I'm always a believer, if you're in a 12-team league, three teams will be eliminated because they don't pay attention enough. They don't, you know, they just don't care. So that now you bring your league down to nine. Three other teams will be eliminated by injuries. Nothing they can do. They just got devastated. And then they really, so what you're hoping for, if you're not one of those three injury teams, that you're fighting with five other teams for the money, you know, for the first place spot, whatever it might be. But this season, Mike, I have to wonder if moment three are going to be eliminated by injuries. I mean, it's brutal out there right now. And like I said, a 10-day deal is not the worst thing. You know, you're on a 10-day, you come back right away. We can all survive that in a 162-game season. But you can't survive 7, 8, 90. A guy's going on a deal. And it seems like, well, one guy comes off, one guy goes on. They're just rotating. It's painful. It's very difficult. It makes you, if you don't have a deep enough bench, and I know, for instance, in my points league, I believe the way to win that league was coming into the season was to have as many starting pitching on the bench as possible and keep putting them in there. Now that's becoming so difficult because I'm taking zeros at other positions because I don't have a backup second baseman. You know, I don't have anybody to back up Ian Kinsler. So that's a zero now that he's not in there. You know, these other guys that go on the DL late, Wellington Castillo went on late. That's a zero you took all week because nobody has a backup catcher. It's becoming a season defined by injuries.
Do you feel that you could make a move? And how is the starting pitching stockpiling? Is that worked out to your advantage? Have those guys been good enough that you could move somebody to make up for some of the hitters that have gone down?
Well, the problem in a points league is that All that matters is generally is wins. Wins and strikeouts. Yeah. That's where you're going to get your points there. So unfortunately for me, my starting pitching is pitching well. You know, quality starts. I do get points for quality starts, so I'm getting that. But I'm not getting the big points for Ws. Garrett Cole last night's a perfect example. He gives up one run, seven innings, but they doesn't get a win. I've gotten a lot of that this year. It's rough. Sometimes it is just luck. We know wins can be lucky. And I'm not getting that kind of luck with the Ws right now. So right now, to put it nicely, I'm struggling in that league because I'm not getting the wins in the starting pitching. I have some injuries that I can't make up for, and I have some struggling players. You know, Trevor Story is on that roster. Mookie Betts is on that roster. And these are guys that I needed to perform that aren't getting it done.
Yeah, look, I can't blame my lack of success solely on injuries. You know, I picked up Mitch Haniger sort of right away as the season started. I'd lost him for a long period of time. The Britton Kim Bedrosian combo for me was really tough because I was racking up saves at a pretty good clip there with those guys pitching lights out for the most part. Look, I can't call Britton lights out because he's putting more base runners on than he normally does, but his ERA is still one and he was picking up saves. So that's a kind of a double whammy for me. But, you know, I got guys like, you know, Danny Duffy got lit up this past week. K-Rod, he's not killing my ratios because he doesn't pitch enough, but he's not pitching well. And I'm just waiting.
Blew for another save last night.
I know. I'm waiting for my third closure to have an issue now. And he's already got seven saves. His ERA is nearly 6.5, George. I mean, at some point, they might not have better options, but at some point, you get to lose the job when you're pitching like that.
Right. I've got K-Rod in a couple of leagues too, Mike, and I'm thinking the same thing. And I'm actually thinking worse. I'm like wondering why hasn't Hosmer replaced him? Because I would have to. Awful. He's just awful. I mean, he can't even. I think I wrote about him in the closer report this week. I know I wrote about him in the closer report this week. And his numbers all across the board are just terrible. I mean, he's not striking batters. He's walking batters. He's 3-2 on almost every batter, it seems like. He's made, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 12 appearances this season. 12. He only hasn't given up a run in four of them. Think about that. Two-thirds of his appearances, he's given up at least one run. I mean, it's just not good.
He's getting hit hard.
Right, he's getting hit hard. I mean, last year he sort of got to a slow start too, and they waited him out, and he turned it around. How long are you going to wait him out? 6.35 ERA. His WHIP is 1.85. That's awful. I mean, it's just god awful. I understand you don't have anybody else there, but don't you have to give somebody a try? Anybody a try to stabilize things right now? Because what's the purest way to lose the players on your team? When you keep going to the same ninth inning guy and you keep losing games, you should be winning. The players just get deflated, and eventually they'll give up. You know, don't think they can win any game here. You got to give even Justin Wilson a shot. You know, Alex Wilson, listen, there's nobody there. I get it. But someone's got to be given a shot right now over K-Rod because he's just terrible.
Yeah, I mean, my team in particular, you know, I do have those injuries, but two of my back end of the staff guys, I won't say rotation to not annoy Scott Engel, but, you know, I took some shots with Matt Harvey and Matt Moore. They're not working out. I have to cut Moore. I was inches away from doing it to pick up Severino, and I didn't do it, and I may regret that for the rest of the year. Now, will Matt Moore stabilize over time? Maybe, but he's had some really bad outings, including the one the last week where he gave up 9 runs to the Dodgers. The problem is, he's had 3 good outings and 3 terrible outings, so it's been really hit or miss. I think the 6.75 ERA is only because it's early in the season, but the ups and downs are going to be a little bit too much, even though he's effectively my last starting pitcher. So, I'm just in any event, we'll turn back to the waiver wire to see if I can fix my team along with some of yours that you're those folks that are listening out there. So we just talked about Michael Taylor. Go back to Ben Gamel from the Mariners. He was promoted from AAA to replace Mitch Haniger, who I just talked about, outperforming everybody's expectations so far. 338, 442, 600 slash, 4 homers, 16 RBIs, and 20 runs scored in only 95 plate appearances, George.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to get all that excited here about Ben Gamel. I think former Yankee, I believe. They let him go. Nice player. But he's going to have the job all season long. We don't know that. Right now he's batting .325, 1 homer, 7 RBIs. No real speed to worry about there. Although he has stolen around 20 bases in the minors at times, although I don't think he's going to run a whole bunch up here in the majors. I mean, like I said, I think he's a guy, a very short-term fix. You know, so yeah, you do it for the until Hanager comes back, which could be a little bit with the oblique injury there. So I'm not all that excited about Gamble here, no.
Joey Rickard, outfielder for the Orioles. Tim says here, at best, he's going to start whenever the Orioles face a lefty. He thrived a role in which he thrived last season until he tore up his thumb on a slide. So he's capable for hitting for average. He'll notch a few homers and stolen bases. Not too much else out there. He's very lightly owned, only 1% owned, but we're talking about a deep league replacement here.
Nothing to see here. Move on.
Okay. Kevin Pillar, outfielder for the Blue Jays. Ownership slowly creeping upward. He's just wondering what's taking fantasy owners so long to catch on. Like, maybe I should bring in Pillar. But he's convinced that he's on the verge of a breakout season, swinging at far fewer pitches out of the zone. Gains in contact rate, fewer swinging strikes, first pitch strikes, and fewer strikeouts with more walks. So thoughts on Kevin Pillar?
Yeah, Pillar probably is someone who should be owned in more leagues. Now, the Blue Jays are pretty much cratered in the early going this season. That just hasn't worked out at all up there in the Toronto for various reasons. A lot of injuries there, but that team's not playing well also. Pillar, though, could be somebody who can certainly cover your injuries for the other guys that have gotten hurt here. He's a guy that you mentioned doesn't get enough love as he probably should. Not that he's great. He's not a superstar, but he's better than people give him credit for.
Yeah, speaking of crater, Jose Bautista is hitting 180, George. We are a long way into the season for him to be hitting 180.
Yeah, well, listen, it lets them know why teams didn't go bananas over him in free agency, right? They saw something because he got no offers at all. He had to go back to Toronto there. You know, he had a good spring. He did have a good spring, and he looks like he's starting to come out of it a little bit. At least he was. He played the Yankees, and he always has the Yankees well, and had a good series there. But then he goes to Tampa Bay. And he's 0 for his last 9. You know, so it is what it is at this point. What are you hoping for? I mean, the average isn't getting any better. Even when he was hitting well over the past couple of years, the average wasn't good. It wasn't helping you fantasy-wise. Batted 234 last year, 250 the year before. He did have a 286 and 14, but then it was 259, 241 the years before that. So really, what you were hoping for are two – you're probably praying for 250 and 30 home runs. Well, you're not getting the 250. The 30 home run seems unlikely at this point. Only at 22 last year. Only has 2 at this point this season. We don't care what he did in April. We only care from this point on. I don't know if it's going to get all that much better, folks. I mean, I think he'll get 10, 12 home runs at least. But at this point.
10, 12? That's awful.
Well, hey, I think it's the low end there. What are you hoping for? Really, what are you hoping for?
I mean, I was hoping for 20 to 25.
Keep open.
This hope is not a plan. If I give him 10 to 12 homers out of him when he's hitting 180, I'm cutting him.
Well, I think he should be cut.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say should, because there may be nothing else to pick up off your waiver wire. I'm not cutting him a Joey Ricard. Yeah. You know, someone like that. I mean, it really depends on what your waiver wire, what size league you're in. I mean, you're in a 16, 18 team league. You have no choice. You're probably going to have to keep him. You're in a 12 team league. Once again, that's what we look at here. I'm assuming there'll be somebody you can live with. And maybe you don't want to cut him, but maybe you want to bench him for a couple of weeks. I understand if he gets hot and you're in a weekly lineup league and all of a sudden you lose the three home runs he hits that week. I get it. But at the very least, until that lineup is healthier and maybe teams have to throw him more fastballs, I'm moving on.
I picked up Justin Smoke the other day to help myself out. He's been all right this year. He's picking up some hits right there. He's not an exciting player, but 5 homers at least and 271 average, I'll take it.
God, I remember when he was the big thing, his name was bandied about being traded for Cliff Lee, and they couldn't. Oh, my God. He's turned out to be a severe disappointment. But you said he's been 271. He's got some pop. 5 home runs, 15 RBIs, no speed to mention there. He's, once again, you need a corner infielder to fill in for you for a week, two, a month. You could probably survive with him. But over a long season, he'll hurt you.
A couple of other guys he mentions here, the outfield, Tim McCullough does. Scott Schebler from the Reds, Domingo Santana from the Brewers. Any thoughts on either of those players?
Once again, short-term fix. Most of these guys, and that's what they are. They're short-term. That's the reason they're available in so many leagues. They're short-term fixes. You ride these guys while they're hot. You've mentioned probably, 10, 15 players? If one or two actually pay off for the remainder of the season where they actually are this good the rest of the season, that would be a lot.
Who do you like the most, Pillar, out of that whole group?
Probably, he has the biggest track record, plays in the ground, a good ballpark on turf. Pillar would be my problem. Would more than likely be my guy.
Yeah, a few pitchers he mentions here. Matt Andreese from the Rays, Jesse Hahn from the A's, Mike Foltynewicz from the Braves, Chase Anderson from the Brewers.
I'd go Folty there.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's the guy we had the most expectations for when we talked about him in the spring. So those are some names. Turn the page in the next hour. Talk about who's hot, who's not. We're going to close out the hour after the break. It's Mike and George on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're here till 10. Back after this. Back, George and I, here until 10. Hit us up on Fantasy Sports Radio on Twitter at FNTSY Radio. 161 players on the DL in Major League Baseball. It's May 7th. It's a staggering number. Staggering number. George, we'll talk about who's hot, who's not in the next hour. It's probably getting harder for you to write that article because there's fewer and fewer good players to pull that from, but we always have our ups and downs from week to week. One thing I wanted to talk about quickly, since we only have a couple of minutes, the Jaguars picked up, as we turn the page to football for a second, the Jaguars picked up Blake Bortles' fifth-year option, and some people are scratching their heads saying, well, they're not even sure if they like him. It's a little bit of math here. Really, they're set to pay Bortles only $3.2 million in the final year of his rookie standard rookie contract this upcoming year. You get a huge kicker for the 50-year option, which is a $19 million option for year five. So people say, why would they play Blake Bortles that much? Well, do the math. You put it together, it's about $22 million over the next 2 years. They're effectively paying Blake Bortles $11 million per, which is ranks as the 22nd highest paid quarterback amongst NFL starters. So they lock somebody in, and despite the fact that there's a $19 million kicker, I think part of it is that it looks like they are trying to change their strategy, and maybe the guy will be throwing a lot less with Fournette and Cam Robinson and some other additions.
Well, I look at it as this also. Who do you want the quarterback there? It's not like they have somebody else on the roster ready to take over the starting job. What do you want, Chad Henne? Check down Chad to get the job? Brandon Allen? Really? So, no, I think this is sort of a no-brainer. Even if you don't believe in Bortles, it's not going to happen. Well, he's certainly your quarterback this year. Maybe you draft someone next year, and that's fine. But, you know, Bortles at the very least could still start 4 or 6 games in 2018 and sort of usher that guy in. So I think this is a no-brainer move. You mentioned the money here, which is not nowhere near close to an extravagant fee for a quarterback. So I'm fine with this. I think it's the right move.
Yeah, and we also have a scenario where, as you just said, who do you want it to be? They don't have a plan in place. It obviously isn't Henne. If you want to fast forward to Bortles doesn't play well again this year, and then they have to figure it out in the offseason, well, you have a little bit better of a draft class coming in. It depends, obviously, how many games they're going to win or lose, if they're willing to trade up for a quarterback in next year's draft with guys like Rosen and Darnold and Josh Allen from Wyoming, which I've been listening to a lot more people lately. They think that Allen actually has a chance to beat out Sam Darnold to be the number one pick. In any event, are they going to get into the Kirk Cousins sweepstakes? Who knows? Like, there's just isn't a plan. So the plan to have Bortles at $11 million is reasonable, even if you don't like it.
Yeah, I think that was their plan, by the way. I think they knew all along they were going to have Bortles for this year and probably next year. Like I said, they could draft the quarterback and then move on from there, but they'll give Bortles one more shot. Maybe they figure they have the weapons around them now, a real running game. At least what they assume is a real running game with Fournette. Defense is good. Going to change the tone of this offense to maybe more more run heavy than pass heavy.
Yes, no. Yes, no answer. Do you think Bortles has a shot to turn this around, or do you think he's done?
I think he has a shot, but I wouldn't bet any money on it.
Got it. That's 1 hour down. We got 1 hour to go. It's Mike and George. We're going to talk who's hot, who's not in MLB. We'll get back to a little bit of football stuff in the next hour before Fantasy Bagels and Baseball at 10.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
Back for hour number two, Mike and George on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You can take the world's premier 24/7 Fantasy Sports Radio Network with you wherever you go. Download the Fantasy Sports Radio app in the iTunes Store on Google Play and listen for free anytime, anywhere. Just go to your Google store, Google Play store, or iTunes store, and take the Experts with you and get it for free. FNTSY Sports Radio app for free right now. So download it and listen. You can listen to this show live, on demand, whenever you want. So we do a good job of getting stuff up there, all kinds of good content on there, whether you're listening live or on demand. So search for any show that you want, Fantasy Football Frenzy, Fantasy Bagels and Baseball, whatever it is. After this will be Fantasy Bagels and Baseball from 10 to 12. That's with Tony and Cha-Cha. And then you have, after that, FanRag Fantasy Baseball with Al Melchior. That's 12 to 1. And then Tony, Pete Considori and Chris Pavona with the producers from 1 to 3. Beyond that, George, I only got a couple of minutes here in this segment, but you mentioned Billy Hamilton earlier. The guy, I mean, if you drafted the guy and you're waiting for a game where you say, that's the guy that I drafted, yesterday was that day. He sort of single-handedly took apart the Giants with his speed last night. So he gave, in his first at-bat, he had a triple. It's the fastest triple ever recorded in StatCast history, which is only 3-4 years old. So he was the – oh, that was the second fastest in StatCast history, I think. He owns the record, which he did last year. He then reached back and robbed an Eduardo Nunez extra base hit. In the bottom half of that inning, he hit what looked like a single, but turned on the Jets and made it into a double. It's the fastest double in the StatCast era, previously breaking Kevin Kiermaier's mark. So one pitch later, he then swipes third. It was a Billy Hamilton showcase last night, George.
Yeah, it was. I would disagree and say I don't think last night was the Billy Hamilton you drafted. All right, you've been getting what you want, what you drafted from Billy Hamilton. He's got 90 stolen bases. You mapped this out. He's on pace for 100 stolen bases. He's giving you exactly what you drafted him for. Maybe you'd like to see that average tick up a little bit. The OBP is terrible for a leadoff hitter. 301 for Billy Hamilton is pathetic. Yeah, I mean, you got to walk. You just have to. He has 10 walks on the season, but you got to do better than that. You just have to for his type of speed. Put the ball on the ground, man, and no one's going to be able to catch you. That being said, you're getting what you want from me. He's going to win you the stolen base category. He's like all by himself. Certainly give you a bunch of fantasy points there. So he is what he is. He's a speed monster. He's an absolute speed monster, and he's doing what you're paying him for. The home runs will be few and far between.
Do you think he can get to the 100?
In this day and age, I'm going to say no. It just seems like it's not done. But he is a different kind of player in that if he's not running, he adds no other value offensively. So maybe the Reds just, you know, hey, just go. Just go. Run. You know, when you can't steal first base, you've got to get on base more often. If I had to bet, Mike, I would take the under. But then again, if you want to say over 80, over 90, I'd probably take the over.
So very close. If I put it at 85, which is probably fair to put it at, would you take the over?
I'd probably go over, yeah. I think that's how close I think it's going to be.
Yeah. So not too much time left here, but the Yankees jumped all over Brett Anderson, and he just lit the guy up. He threw a third of an inning yesterday, 6 hits, 5 earned runs. His ERA is over 8 currently on the season. But Brett Gardner with a couple of more hits. Aaron Hicks just pounding the ball right now, hitting .355, but he went 4-for-5 yesterday and hit another homer, George.
I've been a proponent of his for a while now. I think he should get more playing time. I'm pretty sure he'll start tonight, too. John Lester's going for the Cubs, another left-hander. I expect Gardner to start and probably Ellsbury to get another day off, which makes sense. You know, Ellsbury's dealing with the bruised nerve in his, I think it's his left elbow, or it could be his right elbow. I'm not completely positive about that. He did pinch hit and got on base on Friday. So I expect Ellsbury to sit again tonight against Lester and Hicks to get in there. I think Hicks has to play. You know, at this point, I think he has to get in there. His bat is paying off. Yankees acquired him in the they traded the backup catcher here, and that trade is working out great for them. He's better than a fourth outfielder, has a rocket for an arm in the outfield, a lot of power there. Like what Hicks is bringing on.
Yeah, Starlin Castro continues a torrid start as well. 3-for-4, he hits a homer. 3 more RBIs, 381. Just pounding his former teammates in Chicago. Starlin Castro off to an amazing start. I just did not see this coming. Granted, it'll cool off at some point. I just didn't see this coming.
I don't know why we didn't see it coming. He's been a hitter ever since he came to the majors. He leads the league in hits here, playing great, hitting the pile, hit 20 home runs last year. Don't see why he won't do it again.
Good stuff out of him. Javi Baez gave you a little bit out of Chicago. That's about it. It's Mike and George. We'll be back. We're going to talk who's hot, who's not next with George Kurtz and the Roto Experts in the Morning. Mike and George back on Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Going to talk about George's who's hot, who's not. Get articles like this and more in the exclusive Edge in-season fantasy baseball package, which is available on the rotoexperts.com. So, and get ahead of the pack with our in-depth statistical breakdowns, trend analysis, and player insights. Become a waiver wizard and learn how to scan the numbers like a roto scientist. We help you set the ideal lineups every week. And this season, you get a built-in fantasy training staff with our new injury advisor powered by InsideInjuries.com. So get the exclusive Edge in-season fantasy baseball package now and start soaring to the top of the standings. Enter promo code FREERADIO at checkout for a special discount. So, you titled it "Buying on Charlie," or it was titled "Buying on Charlie Morton and the Fantasy Baseball Verdict on Derek Holland." So, George, I like to go with the who's not first to see if you positively jinxed anybody. Well, you wrote about Wilson Contreras,
pessimistic bastard.
you wrote about Wilson Contreras. He almost got his head taken off by Starlin Castro. So,
great base running there, Starlin.
Yeah. Despite the fact that he's been hitting great, the base running probably needs a little bit of work. I think you make a good point too. You did before the break about expectations shouldn't have been low on Castro. I mean, I've really liked him since he came over as a Yankees fan.
They stole him.
Yeah.
They traded him for, and they got the player, and they got Warren back.
That's right.
I mean, literally, they got Castro for nothing.
Yeah, you're right. And he's been a huge piece here. And, you know, we'll see. I mean, you seemingly want him around long term. Didi Gregorius on the other side has been better than advertised, and we don't expect him to be around long term. But Castro, there's no reason for him to not be here for a while. Yes,
pretty much stole him too.
Yeah,
I mean, was that the Shane Green trade? If I remember correctly,
I think that's right.
Yeah, so you know, sometimes Brian Cashman catches a lot of grief, and yeah, of course he's made bad deals. Every GM has, you look at Ellsbury alone. But when he makes a good trade, he's made a couple of good trades here to help the Yankees in the middle infield. He had no idea, no way of knowing. All of a sudden, the Yankees are going to have, I think, three very good shortstop prospects in the minors, led by another Cub, Gleyber Torres, who could be up later this season. A lot of scouts believe he's already ready. And the Yankees are, with Torres, they're playing at second, short, and third in the minors. And that lets you know that they think Gregorius and Castro could be long-term options in New York, and maybe they want Torres to play third base if he can do it. You know, or maybe Castro moves over to third, or maybe Gregorius, whatever. You know, it lets you know the Yankees are loaded with middle infield prospects there. Good news there. Gregorius, once again, now that he's back off the DL, the shoulder's healed, he's another middle infield option. Another guy hit 20 home runs last year. Listen, it's not breaking news here. The ball flies out of Yankee Stadium. So you're going to get some power from these guys, especially the left-handed power guys. So I think 20 home runs. I know Castro's bats right-handed, by the way. I think 20 home runs is coming for both these players once again.
If you were mapping it out, since you brought it up, we'll get back to your article in a sec. Since you brought it up, how would you map out that middle infield? Would you keep Torres at short and move Didi over? Would you move Didi to second, Castro to third? How would you put it all together?
Well, from everything we hear, Torres is a super prospect, right? I mean, he's a guy, yep, who could be fantastic. I don't think you mess with him. I think shortstop's his natural position, and he's good at shortstop. We're not talking about a bad shortstop. We're talking about a very good shortstop. I think he stays at short. I think the problem is, if you do that, that probably means Gregorius goes to second, Castro goes to third. You're messing around with everything then. You know, I get that. That's not good. Castro's proven to be an adequate second baseman, but far from great. Yeah, he's not the greatest at second baseman, but he's got the body build to play third base. They all have the arm strength to do it. So I think that actually does make some sense. But yeah, I think there's a lot of moving parts there. I get what the Yankees are doing. Yeah, if Torres can play third, that might help as well. And don't forget, the Yankees, although their farm system is aces, fantastic system, what they lack, though, is starting pitching there, especially with Caprilli and out for Tommy John surgery. Eventually, I'm not saying this year, but eventually, I wonder if Gregorius is trade bait for that starting pitcher.
Yeah. And Headley is signed until through next year?
Through next year, yeah. Headley, listen, he's had a nice start to the season, but Headley makes some boneheaded decisions out there, man. He's a guy, I know, I'm a Yankee fan, watch all the games, and you see he'll make the great play and then can't make the adequate one. He's another base-running guy who's just like, his instincts aren't the greatest at times, and he's another guy who gives those facial expressions that make you go, what? You know, like Eli Manning, like he just sometimes looks lost out there for a guy who can obviously play the game. But he's had a good start to the season. He's a placeholder. But right now, the Yankees, third base is probably the one position in the Yankees organization where they don't have a top prospect. You know, so his job is safe. But that's why I believe, I've said this before, when Machado and Trout are both free agents, I think Machado has a better chance of landing. Machado and Harper, by the way, not Trout. I think Machado has a better chance of landing in New York because there's no third base prospect. Where in the outfield, the Yanks are loaded. They got Ellsbury, you got Gardner, you got Judge, you got Rutherford, you got Frazier. The Yankees have more outfields than they know what to do with right now.
Yeah. My thought is the same as you on Torres. Keep him at short. I'm almost inclined to – see, the problem is, like, next year – I'm with you on Didi being a piece. And, like, maybe they just ride it out with Headley until next year and then get in the Machado sweepstakes. But I'm inclined to just move Didi to third and not mess up a couple of positions. Do you know what I mean? I think you're right. Castro could be a piece there at third, and maybe Didi could just move right over to second and pick up where he left off at short. But I'm almost inclined to make Gregorius play third, but it's not even something he has to do right now with Headley playing fairly well. And, you know, Torres isn't coming up yet. So, but I'm with you. I think you keep Torres at short and figure out the pieces around him, especially if they're serious about Machado, which they will be. In any event, moving on to your article, Wilson Contreras, you're saying he's ice cold. Then he got run into. He didn't do anything really this weekend. So thoughts on him?
Well, listen, he's the better. Yeah, he's a very good catcher. But I've been annoyed as a Contreras owner. I've been annoyed with Joe Madden. He plays Miguel Montero a lot, more than the one day a week thing. Yeah, we all know catchers are going to sit one day a week, right? That's the norm here. We know that's coming, so you can't be surprised about that. But it seems like Montero plays 2 days a week, 2.5 days a week on average sometimes, and Montero's playing well. He's hitting better than Contreras right now, so it's sort of a chicken or the egg theory here. Will Contreras hit better if he plays more often, or you know, he's not going to get the chance until he does hit better? What's going to come first here? So he's been a little frustrating right now because he's not getting it done. We know he has the power. If he played every day, I think he did 22, 25 home runs here, but he's not. So it's frustrating on Contreras right now, mainly because Montero is just outperforming him. So Madden is just going to Montero more than we'd probably like.
Jason Kipnis, you said, as you say in the article, he's off to a slow start. And if you're surprised, that's on you. He had a shoulder injury. It forced him to be placed on the DL at the start of the season. His teammate Michael Brantley went through a myriad of issues with his shoulder injury. So Jason Kipnis, ice cold.
Yeah, I mean, once again, I think so. Everybody assumes when a player comes back off the DL, oh, they're going to be fine. They're going to be just like they were. You know, so if you're surprised by Kipnis and how poorly he's doing, it is on you. I own Kipnis in the league. It's a deep league, so it's a 16-team league, so I have to start him. I don't have anybody else. Matter of fact, when Kipnis was out and Segura went down, I think I had to play without a middle infielder for a while. There was just no one else to grab here. But if you're surprised, once again, not everybody comes back off the DL and is A, 100% healthy, and B, ready to play Major League Baseball. You know, they're just not. Sometimes it takes a while here. He pretty much has to start spring training all over again. I do think he'll be fine, but when is that fine? A month? You know, does he need weeks, a month? You know, will the power maybe not come back? It is a shoulder injury. It's what we were so worried about with Michael Brantley. Not the same injury, but you get the idea here. Maybe he can't drive the ball. So I'm certainly worried here, but there's nothing you can do. Unless you have somebody better on your roster, you can absolutely bench him, and I would if I could. But you're not trading him. No one's going to take him off your hands, not for any kind of decent payback. So right now, you're sort of stuck with him.
Yeah, Carlos Gonzalez, he said you've seen slow starts from him before. You're not saying he should lose his job, but he could see a few more days off, which is interesting because last night he did not play. So Mark Reynolds hitting .307 with 8 homers. Ian Desmond is back off the DL. Gerardo Parham, Charlie Blackman, you got all these options here. Thoughts on Cargo?
Well, you mentioned it. The Rockies are playing a little better than we thought here, right? They're competing. You know, Cargo is going to have some trade value there, maybe in your fantasy league, and certainly in Major League Baseball as well, if and when he starts hitting. But when David Dahl comes back, which we think will be by the end of the month, and right now even that's iffy, there's 6 guys for 4 spots. You know, which means they can just go with the hottest players, best players hitting here, or go with some kind of platoon situation here. And right now it's kind of ugly. He's got to start hitting. Reynolds is hitting. Desmond is hitting. You know, these other guys, Blackman, I don't think would be platoon, but he's hitting. So, you know, you sort of got Parra there. Reynolds could be a platoon with it could be a mess is what the bottom line is. 2 guys have to sit out. That's not a good situation.
As George said, Rockies playing better than anticipated. They're 19-12. It's the second best record in the NL behind the Nationals at 21-9, who are on fire. Two more guys quick. Evan Longoria, Chris Davis. Thoughts about those guys quickly?
Chris Davis will be fine. He'll hit his home runs, but his average is going to hurt you. You know that going in. Longoria, the point here was to make that he had to, he's complaining about maybe possibly plantar fasciitis. He had the same injury a couple of years ago. Still hit fine, so I wouldn't panic about it. He's played with this before and played well.
Okay, we'll talk about who's hot after the break. Get into a little bit of previews for today's MLB slate. A lot of baseball news today, so we're going through it all. Mike and George back after this. Back in with George, going through who's hot, who's not. We did the who's not players to talk about who's hot. George, you're going to help me fix my team right now, buddy.
Oh, yeah, because things are going so well for me.
Fair point. But Charlie Morton, you said you don't know where to start with him. His average fastball is over 95 miles an hour, highest of his career. He's striking out more than a batter per inning, and he plays for the Astros, so W's are easier to come by. You like Charlie Morton, and you're putting your money where your mouth is.
Yeah, I already have him in a couple of leagues. I claimed him in a couple of more, and I was upset that I couldn't get him in my home league as someone claimed him before me. The strikeouts are there. I can't explain the higher velocity. That's unusual, to put it nicely, where velocity goes up. This is not a rookie here. You know, not a young kid. Morton's been around forever. Bounced around a couple of organizations here. Pitches for a good team, so wins theoretically should be easier to come by. So that's what we're looking for here. Like I said, his average fastball velocity is 95.4. All right, that's pretty damn good. By far the highest of his career. I mean, it's not even close. So that's lets you know something. Either he fixed something, he's healthy, whatever it might be. But he's striking out more than a batter per inning. He's 3-2 on the air. ERA, you would like to see it be a little better than 3.97, but he's had a couple of hiccups here. I'm not saying he's going to be the next Noah Syndergaard or someone great like that, but he's pitching well. You know, he's someone, I think the upside is there, so someone I want to grab.
So I'm gonna pick him up right now. Who am I cutting between this group? The most cuttable players are Jose Bautista, Matt Moore, and I guess conceivably Yadi Molina, even though Yadi Molina is playing a lot better than Jonathan Lucroy right now. I don't need two catchers, so
Molina.
So cut Yadi. So
I never keep two catchers.
Okay. So Matt Moore, leave him around for now.
Yeah, depth starting pitcher, maybe he figures it out. So yeah, sure. I would I'll keep Matt Moore. And listen, to be honest with you, I'm a guy who'll go down the ship with Matt Moore. I love him. I think he has a great great arm. But, man, he just disappoints. But I'll keep Matt Moore.
Yeah, he's crushing me right now. But in any event. So, Charlie Morton, you talked about him. Derek Holland, you are absolutely skeptical, but there's no denying the numbers. His ERA currently sits at 2.02 with a 1.04 whip. His velocity is down from his heydays in Texas, but he still has 35 Ks and 35 innings pitched. So thoughts on Derek Holland?
When I think Derek Holland, Mike, over negativity comes to me. Been hurt. Pitches in a bandbox. You know, not a very good team. What's going to happen when they trade everybody? Maybe he'll be one of the guys traded. The positivity is he's pitching fantastic. Maybe he knows how to pitch in smaller ballparks. He pitched, I know Texas isn't a small ballpark, but the ball flies out of there, as we all know. Maybe he just knows how to pitch. I should give him more credit than I am, but I'm skeptical here that this is just a small sample size. It's sort of a fluke, and the average is going to catch up to him. So I'm staying away unless I'm desperate here. And maybe, like I said, I think that's just, I feel bad to say that because I think he's pitched so well. He deserves more love in fantasy, but he's the kind of guy that reminds me of, as soon as I grab him, he's going to blow up.
Yeah. So Cesar Hernandez from the Phillies, how many people realize that he already has four homers and is batting .336? It seems like every time we go through the box scores, George, which I understand we didn't get a chance to do that today. Tony and Josh, I'll probably take you through some of that. We really had to get through injuries and waiver pickups. I think it was really important on a Sunday in order to do that. But, if you drafted him, you were just expecting a middle infielder that could fill in at times and maybe actually hoping for some stolen bases. But, give me your thoughts on Cesar Hernandez. Really kind of amazing that he's hitting .336. Every time we do check those box scores for the Phillies, the guy's got a couple of hits.
Been .339 now. I mean, he just keeps hitting. But you're right. If I drafted Cesar Hernandez, I want stolen bases. Even though, you know, you look at his career, he stole 19 and 15, 19 2015, 17 in 2016. That's probably not enough. You want more. You know, I think this guy, you know, he's only 5'10", 161 pounds. He should be stealing 30 bases. You know, get on base and run. So only that four right now, as many stolen bases as home runs, is sort of depressing. The four home runs are nice, but that's not why I drafted him. You know, I don't need the power there. I more than likely need the speed. The average is fantastic. You know, I don't think he's going to keep it up all year long. Not a 339, but I think it'll be a plus average. I'm hoping the speed comes around. But, you know, you always wonder with teams if they say, hey, don't run. In this day and age, with all these stats and all these sabermetrics, some teams don't believe in running. So unless they know you're going to be safe, they're not going to send you. They're not going to green light you enough to get you all those stolen bases you need.
The next guy on the list is, he's probably the most talented player we've actually had in this article this year, but it's indicative of what you kind of thought about him going into the season as well, Zach Greinke.
Yeah, I think Greinke was, he was a lightning rod during spring training, right? Because the velocity was down. He was terrible last year. So he was falling in drafts. You and I criticized Mike Cardona for drafting him. I want to say in round four. I may be wrong about that, so I apologize if I am, Mike. But, you know, we did get on him for that, and it's paying off right now. You know, maybe last year was just a fluke, a 1 year getting used to being in a new ballpark thing. You know, his velocity still is down, and he's in his mid-30s. This is not a young pitcher anymore. But, you know, as a baseball fan, I'm happy to see Greinke sort of figured it out. I do worry about him over the long course of the season, and he's another guy, Mike. I think I'd be looking to move him if I was a fantasy owner.
You would?
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to rely on him being able to do it all season long. I like what I've seen during the first month, so I think value is high. I'm not saying you're going to be able to trade him for more than he's worth, but I think he'll get equal value back. And I think I'd rather like to get to a player that I trust a little bit more. You know, the fastball velocity is still down. He's only throwing the ball 90 miles an hour. You know, his BABIP is actually high, so you could make an argument that his numbers will come down even better than his ERA, because his BABIP right now is 327, which is the highest of his career. Other than his rookie season in 2005. So you could make an argument that those numbers are a little inflated. They'll come down a little bit, which is good for him. But yeah, I think I'd be willing to move him on here. See if I can get equal value. I'm not giving him away, but if I get equal value, I'm moving on.
And didn't want to bury the lead because we had actually already kind of talked about him, but Starlin Castro made your list and he continued his hot streak yesterday. So, as we talked about sort of in the previous segment, Starlin Castro's been great since he's got to the Yankees. He's never going to approach those 20-plus stolen bases he had when he was first called up to the majors, but he's delivering in a big way right now. You're thrilled. We talked about the depth at second base going into the year, and Castro's actually kind of crept up those rankings as the season has gone on.
Yeah, you know, one play I wanted to put, we already talked about Castro. He's great. I think he's a must-own now in pretty much all leagues. He's just hitting too well here. One player I wanted to put on that list that I didn't because the Dodgers told us they were going to send him down when Jacques Peterson got called up, and I didn't want to waste that slot there. Cody Bellinger, the Dodgers.
Yeah, I was going to talk about him. Absolutely. He's been fantastic.
The Dodgers right now would be out of their gourd, just completely nuts to send this guy back down to the minors when Gonzalez comes back off the DL. He's hitting a ton. He's got bat speed. Wow. He swings hard. He swings fast. He's making contact. The ball flies. This is an uber prospect again. You know, super prospect guy is going to be a very good ball player. I've claimed him in a couple of leagues. What else do you want? He's batting 357. Already has 5 home runs, 14 RBIs. Even stole your base. His OPS is 1.2. I mean, it's 1,200. I mean, no way I'm sending him back down. I'm rolling the dice right now. I'm grabbing Bellinger.
Hit a grand slam last night in a game in which Clayton Kershaw was pretty fired up. Kershaw tossed 7 1/3 innings of 1-run ball in the 10-2 victory last night. Bellinger hit that grand slam. I was just reading this stat, George. Kershaw's ERA dipped to 2 in 31 career starts versus the Padres. And at Petco, it's 1.85 career ERA.
No, that's not surprising. Petco, good pitchers, ballpark, even though they brought the fences in, and it's Kershaw. And San Diego's been a terrible team for a while. So
yeah.
I don't think that's all that shocking. Camp injury or not.
Yeah, agreed. But in any event, as George said, You know, the Dodgers, they're sitting at 17-14 right now, but it seems like every time they bring somebody up, George, there's just a new guy to talk about. Seager, Bellinger, there's just always a guy that the Dodgers have always been really good about this historically, about having a young lightning rod of an exciting player. Rookies of the year abound out of L.A., and Bellinger is obviously another guy who's super hot.
Yeah, I think they've won more Rookie of the Years than any other organization. I think I'd have to look that up to make sure, but I believe I think heard
that's,
that. Back.
I think that's absolutely right. Yeah.
Yeah. So they do know how to bring up young players.
So good stuff there. Feel free to hit your waiver wires for some of those guys. Good news about that, your article this week, George, is you actually did have a couple of guys that are available for pickup between Morton and Holland. I literally just picked up Morton in my league. I think I'm going to get that claim. And Cesar Hernandez. You know, a lot of leagues, I'm sure he's been picked up, but based on sort of tepid thoughts on him going into the year, he's somebody that in shallower leagues could still be out there.
Yeah, he can be. Like I said, it's funny. If I own Hernandez's greatest season he's had, I'm probably a little disappointed right now. Steal some bases. Run, young man.
Yeah, when you're doing your math during your draft and adding up all the numbers that you needed, he's throwing your ratios off. Your batting average is up a few points, but your stolen bases are down. So we'll take a look at the pitching probables today as we sort of go around the league. You know, we're not going to do the recaps of yesterday. I'm sure Tony and everybody else will work on that today. But in any event, the schedule for today, we got Boston, which destroyed the Twins yesterday. Sorry, I'm having a little bit of a computer issue here, George. So if you want to get me the pitching probables on the day, that would be helpful. But we'll see what we got here. Anyway, the ones that jump. So Matt Harvey throws again today. He's going against Jose Urena. That's at 110 at Citi Field. We got Joe Biagini for the Blue Jays going up against Alex Cobb for the Rays. Jose Quintana, the often talked about guy, going up against Chris Tillman. Chris Tillman just coming back off of a stint on the DL, George.
Yeah, I'm going to stay away from Tillman there. I'm not touching him. No, thank you. You mentioned about Biagini here. He's actually a reliever. I'd let you know that Toronto's a little short in the starting rotation there. Aaron Sanchez is out. They got rid of Latos. So like I said, they're a little short there. That's why Biagini gets in. He was actually, some could argue, their best setup guy. Pitched against the Yankees the other day. Didn't pitch very well.
Why'd they get rid of Matt Latos?
Because he sucks. Pretty much, he sucks.
His ERA was 8.18. So tough times for Matt Latos.
And Chris Sale goes today for Boston. Someone want to tell me how could baseball have more screwed up that Oriole Red Sox series this week? I mean, Chris Sale throws behind 98 mile per hour fastball behind Manny Machado. Joe Torre, who's the czar of this, admits that I think he was throwing at him on purpose, yet they don't do anything to Sale. Doesn't get suspended, no discipline. Gossman hits Xander Bogaerts with a 77-mile-per-hour curveball, gets thrown out of the game. I mean, really, how much more could you have screwed this up, MLB?
And I'm not blaming Manny Machado. I'm not. They threw at him five times. I'll let him he can hit homers and trot however he wants to around the bases. We'll talk about this a little bit more after the break. Mike and George giving you your pitching probable for the day, a couple of DFS options as well. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, taking a look at today's schedule in MLB. Hopefully gave you some good tips on the waiver wire. So it's kind of like a action-packed show, just in from an informational standpoint, George. I mean, baseball shows can be like that at times, but with the sheer rash of injuries, we really are having to come up with some replacements to figure out what to do with some of these rosters. It's something that we're going to we do our best here to try and stay on top of it on each and every show, but we really have to give people some ideas of who's out there to pick up, regardless of the size of the league.
Yeah, it's a painful week. I mean, it's been a painful season. I think it's going to keep going on for the short-term future. I do think these MLB, the DLs will stop a little bit as the season wears on, because I don't think teams will be as likely or as willing to lose a player for 10 days if they know he's only going to be out for 5 days. I think right now they're playing it cautious, but eventually when the games start to mean more or the teams feel like the games are more important, that they'll keep these players around, just let them eat the 5 days.
So here's something. You totally sparked a discussion point. We could probably spend an entire show talking about this, but we've seen it become a very common situation in the NBA where we are seeing players being rested. It's obviously become a hot topic in the NBA, especially through the end of the year when players are being rested constantly. You know, is it fair to fans that LeBron sits when he's on the road? Whatever, you can go a million different ways with that discussion, but some people are for, some people are against. Ultimately, it's not the coach's job. The coach's job is to win games. So what is interesting about that is the NBA is in many instances very dedicated to analytics. It's not like football and baseball aren't. In fact, baseball in some instances is more dedicated and has been more dedicated to analytics because it's in some ways easier to measure. But NBA teams have decided and studied the fact that the travel schedule with NBA players is putting them at a disadvantage, increasing their injury risk, and frankly, having them play tired very often. With MLB, I mean, there's not a more consistent schedule. There's not more games than any professional sport. Maybe they do utilize it in some ways like the NBA does. The problem is, obviously, it's 10 games when you're talking about MLB. You can't sit the guy for a game or two as you can in the NBA. So I think that's the big difference there. I'm just trying to say what you're talking about. You think they'll dissipate someone on the DL? I wonder if they use it as kind of a midseason break for some players to get them healthy.
Well, that's been going around along forever. I mean, you know, let me remember the 90s and the Yankees and Red Sox always had their big rivalries. The Red Sox, we should always use, you know, June, July, all of a sudden, there's such a pitcher would be put on a DL for 2 weeks, or a sore elbow. And we all knew what that meant. It was a two-week break. And that's fine. You know, if you have the depth in your organization, you can get away with that, and the player doesn't argue about it, hey, do what you got to do. It doesn't bother me in the least. So I had no problem with that. And sometimes I think that is the case here. And once again, if you're protecting your assets, you know, the amount of money you pay these guys, it doesn't bother me if you want to put them on a deal. It's annoying to us fantasy owners, absolutely. But you said it. What is the manager's job is to win games. If he doesn't win games, he's not going to have a job. He's going to get fired. So I'll say it again. It doesn't bother me at all that these guys get placed on a DL. I don't think a manager's job is to placate us fantasy owners. You know, he wants to win. It's frustrating as all hell. We all go through it. We lose a player, you know, we lose a player Monday at 3 o'clock when the lineup set at 1 o'clock. It's annoying. You know, but I think it's also something we got to get used to it, because I don't think it's going to get any less than that. I think as these analytics play a part, more and more teams are going to do this.
Yeah. So obviously, you know, with the 10-day DL, it changes the dynamic a little bit. We're going to have to continue to see how teams use it. They've obviously used it liberally, but unfortunately, they've also used it out of necessity. There's just been a ton of high-profile players that have gotten hurt, and I don't think there's any way for any of us to have prepared for that. So, like I said earlier, you said earlier, Chris Sale throwing today. As you said, it was kind of botched by MLB. He probably shouldn't be pitching in this game, but so be it.
That's
he wasn't punished. Yeah, it's just a disaster. They threw at Manny Machado.
If I'm the Orioles,
times.
I am so ticked off right now, because I think that was just horrible. MLB. I mean, when you admit you think you threw at him, but then you give him no discipline, what is that telling everybody else? Continue throwing baseballs at people.
Yeah,
I totally agree. It's just idiotic. I mean, I don't get it. Why? Because he's a star player. You know, really, is that the reason why did he get away with this? If you know he's throwing the ball, hey, the umpire should have thrown him out. The umpire screwed up from the beginning as well. He should have been thrown out immediately. We all knew what was going on here. It was retaliation for Betts being thrown out the night before, which is retaliation for Machado being thrown out the night before that. So this just keeps running around and around. Bottom line is, the next time Baltimore and Boston meet each other, first week in June, I'll be watching.
Yeah. And George, you know, there's a lot about MLB and teams and the sport policing themselves and all that kind of stuff. The best way to get rid of this stuff, as we've seen in football, is to eject people. Nobody is going to sign off on Chris Sale throwing at people early in games and losing him for a start. Not Sale, not the manager, not his teammates. And like, yeah, well, he gained the respect of the clubhouse, great, but we lost the game because he threw an inning and a third because he couldn't keep your stuff together to not throw at Manny Machado, whatever it is. Do you know what I mean? So in football, we've seen college players, which honestly, I have issues with the manner in which the targeting rule is sometimes assessed, but guys get kicked out of games now in college for hitting people in the head. In football,
well, isn't
we've
that
seen,
the best way, though?
Yes, it is. That's exactly what I'm saying.
You can't find these guys enough. Sales make a gazillion dollars. I mean, you can't find $1 million. If you want to punish them, you want to get it through to them, take away the games. Take away playing time. You know, that's the best way to do it. That'll get through their heads. Well, hey, if I do this, I'm not going to be able to play. I'm going to hurt my team. The fans are going to be mad. Everybody's going to be mad. My manager's going to be mad. GM's going to be mad. Owners are going to be mad. Fans are mad. Media is mad. Everybody's mad. And it really is the best way to do it. Take away games. That's why I was shocked. What kind of message does that send to Chris Sale? We're not going to punish you. Go ahead. Go play.
It just allows him to do whatever the heck he wants. He has been magnificent this year. First six starts with the Red Sox, he struck out 10 or more the last five times out. He goes up against Irvin Santana today. Mike Clevinger of the Indians goes up against Danny Duffy. Danny Duffy's gotten, who I really liked and you did as well, and I have him on my squad. He's had two rough starts in a row. As I said earlier in the show, he gave up six runs on 10 hits and five plus innings last time out. Going down through, Jeremy Hellickson has only had one bad outing so far this year, George. When he played Chicago, the Cubs beat him up for six runs. But he's pitched historically fairly well against the Nationals. So thoughts about maybe Hellickson going against Roark today? It's kind of an interesting pitching matchup.
It is. I'm certainly not starting Hellickson in any DFS leagues, not against Washington. I mean, the big story again with Washington is going to be Bryce Harper. You said Dusty Baker believes give you that extra day. I don't expect Harper to play today, even though there were some rumors that he could pinch hit or he could have pinched it yesterday. I think they'll give him today off as well, and maybe he gets back in the lineup tomorrow.
Right. Going down through some other matchups, we talked about, we got to talk about Zach Davies for the Brewers, goes up against Tyler Glasnow. Tyler Glasnow is a guy that we're still kind of, it says it took a potentially significant step forward Tuesday in Cincinnati. He logged his first MLB win and six inning start against the Reds. So he said he felt like he turned a corner mechanically. And what do you think about Tyler Glasnow against the Brew Crew today?
Fantasy-wise, I don't. I'm still not starting him even because of that. But that being said, the Brewers aren't hitting right now. They're banged up a little bit, got some injuries. Thames is off to a slow start. I think Braun came back last night, so they get him back in lineup. But bottom line is they're not hitting. Glasnow was pretty high prospect. I always get worried when you hear in April. We heard this in April. This is weeks ago that they redid his delivery, his mechanics. I'm like, wow. You didn't work on this in spring training? You saw something in the middle of April? April? We're not talking about June, July, April, that you didn't like and you reworked it? That is a red flag for me. His whip is still 2.13. You know, you mentioned the good start against Cincinnati. He still walked four. You know, he doesn't really get hit around all that much, but he gives away a lot of free passes. So I'm still going to have some hesitation there. But if you were going to start him, I think this is the game. Milwaukee, like I said, struggling offensively. But for me personally, I'm probably staying away.
Michael Wacha has finished at least six innings in each of his five starts. He had a season-high four runs he gave up in his last outing. Mike Matheny described Waka's curveball as, quote, the best it's ever been. His last time out, he faces R.A. Dickey today, who said he doesn't have his good knuckleball yet, but he's working on it.
Waka. Listen, Waka's problem has always been the same thing. It's not pitching. It's lasting. You know, long season tends to get him where his body breaks down. You know, sometimes we say this over and over again. The human arm is not really meant to throw overhand. So at times it will, you know, and not everybody's built the same. And he seems to struggle where he's going to have some problems here. As long as he's healthy and pitching, I have no problem going with him. Yeah, but other than that, I don't expect 30 starts out of him. I think that's silly. And let's face it, if Alex Reyes going to go TJ surgery in February, Walker probably not in the rotation.
You're right. You're right. I think that was the common thought process. Reyes took that out of our hands pretty early in spring training. So, unfortunately, won't be seeing him until next year. The D-backs going up against the Rockies today. George, Tyler Chatwood, who I remember there was a start a couple of weeks ago where we were talking about stacking up against Tyler Chatwood, and I think he threw a complete game, like one run, gave up one run, might have even thrown a shutout. But I should note He was hitless through five innings against the Padres. Walks crept in, and then he gave up five runs in the sixth. He's allowed nine home runs already this season, George.
And today's in Colorado. It is in Colorado, right?
Yep.
I'm gonna be looking at stacks and players here. I mean, I know Chatwood's been, he's been up and down, but it's just the Diamondbacks are hitting, not so much last night, but they're hitting. I think I got to get Mark Reynolds in my line. I was hitting a bunch of home runs again, play him while he's hot. Although once again with Colorado, you have to watch the lineup. There's always a chance that Desmond plays first base and Reynolds sits, or that Desmond sits, or that Power sits. Really, the Rockies. You want to stack these guys, but you got to make sure before lineup lock that you have the lineup in. Because they could make some changes there that you're not going to like. We don't know if Cargo will be in the lineup today either.
You took the words right out of my mouth. You're really going to have to check that lineup today because Cargo actually rested last night. Could see another day of rest, but at the same time, they might be moving some other guys around. I think it's always a possibility that they could have guys sitting that you didn't expect. That game isn't until 3 o'clock Eastern, so that's actually early enough that you can
You should get your lineups in, yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, Cargo has a calf injury. He's really not resting. He's out with a calf. So maybe half calf, half rest, which is not good either because it means he's not going to run.
Yeah. Daniel Norris from the Tigers goes up against the Oakland Athletics. Sonny Gray, who made his return from the DL on Tuesday. He gave up three homers in six innings. But, his first outing back. Thoughts about any of these guys? What are your thoughts really on Sonny Gray in general? Forget from a DFS standpoint. I don't think you could bet a dollar on somebody like Sonny Gray right now. But your thoughts about him coming back, you have any expectations for him?
Well, it's hard to have major expectations. He was such a major disappointment last season. Then was on the DL. You mentioned three home runs in his first start. Now he plays Detroit, a team that can bomb. I don't expect Kinsler to play today, so I think he's out of a lineup there. I'm not starting Gray in any format today. As a baseball fan, you hope he figures it out. Oakland certainly needs him to figure it out. They probably should have traded him when they had the chance because you don't know if he'll ever be able to be the pitcher he once was. So, no, I'm not starting him today. I think he's still sort of recovering, still feeling it. To me, this is his spring training.
Johnny Cueto goes up against his team where he spent the first 8 years of his career in the Reds. Johnny Cueto facing Scott Feldman at the Great American Small Park, as you like to call it. Feldman hasn't done much, but Cueto has been bothered by a blister on his middle finger of his pitching hand. So I think Cueto will go in there pretty motivated. The revenge game, as Scott Engel likes to say.
Yeah, you got to think he'll be juiced. So I feel the same as you. He's going to go out there and pitch well. I don't think the Reds are scoring double digits today. They have destroyed the San Fran pitching staff the last two games. I think that maybe normalizes more today. I expect more of a normal game, especially from Cueto. Feldman, I could see getting beat up. So if I was going to go, I might go in the opposite direction here. And if I wanted to, I might do a lineup, Mike, where if I don't want to stack Arizona, Colorado, maybe I stack some Giants.
Yeah, Andrew Cashner goes up against Dylan Overton. That's Rangers at Mariners. Dodgers at Padres. That's Brandon McCarthy at Trevor Cahill. Cahill's been pretty sharp recently, George.
Yeah, probably going to have some trade value in MLB at the deadline here. A lot of teams are going to be needing starting pitching here. I'll go with McCarthy here, though. You need a cheap second starting pitcher at DraftKings. I think McCarthy's a good option.
He's killing righties. Lefties are hitting a lot better than McCarthy. We got Luis Severino, John Lester. We'll talk a little bit Yankees-Cubs when we come back and close it out before Fantasy Bagels and Baseball takes over at 10. Mike and George back after this. Back to close it out. 2 hours up, 2 hours down. Thanks for joining us today. It's been an action-packed morning with baseball news. We normally mix in a little bit more football, but there's just been so many injuries and so many guys to sort of scoop off the waiver wire that we needed to get through it all. The last game that we didn't really touch on today, it's the night game. Yankees at Cubs. Luis Severino, John Lester, really good pitching matchup. The Cubs need Lester to kind of stop the bleeding here and avoid the sweep, George.
Yes, they do. Cubs really haven't gotten the greatest starting pitch in the past 2 days. Actually, Hendricks pitched He actually didn't pitch all that well Friday either when you look at the game here. The Yankees had base runners on every inning. They just couldn't get him home until Gardner finally hit that three-run bomb in the ninth to win it. Blustery day in Chicago. I mean, it's May. It's like 40 degrees, man. What's going on here? Listen, tonight, I think Lester will, obviously he's not going to give up 11 runs. I think the game will be closer. You know, the Yankees are going to try and take advantage of his inability or unwillingness to throw to first base. So they'll try and run if Gardner can get on base. I don't think Ellsbury plays tonight, but they have some other guys who can run as well. So I think they'll try and take advantage of that as much as possible. For Severino, had a poor last outing. It seemed like the Blue Jays sort of knew what was coming. The Yankees actually worried that maybe Severino was giving away, tipping his pitches, but they've looked at video. They don't think that was the case, so they just think it's, hey, just one bad start here. So I'm probably much more interested in seeing what's fantasy-wise, seeing what Severino does tonight. I think Lester will be fine, but I want to see what Severino does tonight because we've seen this before from him where he can be inconsistent. Sunday night game tonight, ESPN, should be fun.
Yeah, I tend to agree on that. Severino is the guy that you really want to focus on. Lester's made 29 career starts versus the Yankees. Career 13-6 record, 3.78 ERA against New York. But he actually hasn't faced them in 3 years, and this is a very different team than the ones that he was facing then. So I don't know how relevant it is, but obviously he has a lot of experience pitching against the Yankees. So we'll see what happens there tonight. Hopefully it's a little warmer than it's been with this night game tonight.
Yeah, like I said, it's been chilly in Chicago, very windy. And that game, Friday afternoon, was a joke with the wind, where a couple of balls couldn't be caught because the wind was blowing it all over the place. Wind wasn't quite as bad yesterday. I think Matt Modica said it yesterday, and he said it perfectly. Everybody thinks Wrigley Field's a hitter's ballpark. It's actually not. Wind's blowing in, it's pitchers. Wind's blowing out, yeah, it's a major hitter's ballpark. But you don't know which way you're going to get, and that wind can change pretty much on a dime or in any minute there. As of tonight, 45 degrees. So it's certainly not going to be a baseball weather night.
No, and you'll get some wind chill there too. So, George, we didn't get a chance to talk too much hockey today, but what are you settling in? What are you watching today? So obviously baseball all day. What are you watching? What are you going to focus on?
It'll be a baseball day. It's baseball. It's pretty much just every day for me. I enjoy watching the games in the afternoon. I don't think it's any major games. I'll probably watch a little bit of Chris Sale, but I expect him to be dominant against Minnesota. Like I said, there's no really huge games I think are out there in baseball, but I'll be with the package, be going through them all. As for hockey, we got 3 o'clock, Blues Predators game 6, and then tonight, Ducks Oilers game 7. Looking much more forward to the Ducks Oilers games tonight.
Yeah. So, does Washington complete the comeback against Pittsburgh?
No, they got to go. They won Game 5 at home. They're done in Game 6.
All right, folks. Fantasy Bagels and Baseball coming up with Tony Sincotta and Cha Cha next. Those guys for the next 2 hours, and Al Melchior, then the producers. Appreciate you joining us. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. George and I'll be back here next Saturday.